Hello, listeners. I wanted to thank you all for your support and your listenership during the past year and wish everyone a happy new year. Today's podcast is one that I've been looking forward to doing for a long time with Jim Peterson, who I think is one of the best in the business as an analyst, obviously also a former NBA player. And he had a lot of really interesting thoughts about the development of the Wolves, Karl Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Zach LaVine, also what the coaching staff is doing and what they want to start doing to fill in the pieces around those two potential superstars. Also want to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, which is the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information on the internet. You can listen to audiobooks wherever and wherever you want. And you can also sync them up with your Amazon book so you can start reading on your Kindle, then get in the car, pick up right where you left off, stop listening in the car, pick up right back again on the Kindle. I've actually been a subscriber to Audible just on my own for the past 10 years or so. It's a great company and great way to get some entertainment when you've gotten your NBA fix. And also you can use the website audibletrial.com/capspace, and that can get you a free month. And then it's only 15 bucks a month after that. And that also is a great way to support the program. Without further ado, here is Jim Peterson.
All right. Special edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast here. Someone I've wanted to have on for a long time. Well-renowned as perhaps the best local analyst on any of the league pass broadcasts. The Minnesota Timberwolves color analyst and also an assistant coach for the Minnesota Lynx and, of course, former NBA player Jim Peterson. What's up, Jim?
It is a pleasure to be with you, Nate. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, so you are really now, it's been really the umpteenth Wolves rebuild, but this one is striking me as perhaps the most exciting one, and a lot of that is just because of what Karl Towns has been able to do even in such a short time with the Wolves.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, I've been with the Wolves for 18 years, and, you know, I've seen, when I came into the situation, it was just at the beginning of the Kevin Garnett run, so when I came in as a radio analyst, it was his fourth season, and I came into 50-win seasons, and when I first started, Steph Marbury was still part of it, too, so think about that rebuild and what Kevin McHale was able to do early on to completely, you know, kind of transform a doormat into a perennial playoff team. And so, and then that season, it was a lockout season of 98-99, Steph short circuits that whole thing by opting out. And so seemingly every rebuild is, you know, been punctuated by some kind of, you know, either contractual situation or a player wanting to do something else. And, you know, in that case, it was Steph Marbury. You know, then there's the Kevin Love situation, where that thing kind of fell apart, through the David Kahn debacle. And then, you know, while this team is probably the most promising in terms of the rebuild you're talking about, you know, having Flip Saunders pass away kind of, you know, puts another little sort of, you know, chink in the plan a little bit, you know? So, I mean, Flip was a big part. I mean, Flip has handpicked every part of what this team is right now, from the coaching staff to Milt Newton being in the front office, to every player on the roster except for Nikola Pekovic and Ricky Rubio. So it is really exciting, and Karl Anthony Towns is certainly a super exciting player. He's got all the earmarkings of a Hall of Fame-type career. I think when you look at his skill sets, you know, he's got so many in terms of what he can do offensively. Defensively, he's still got some things to learn, but his foot speed allows him, I think, to have a greater upside in terms of being a pick-and-roll defender and rim protector. Early on, when the Wolves were, you know, they were 9-9 at one point, Karl Anthony Towns was a huge factor in, like, getting big blocks at the end-of-game situation that have helped us win games. So defensively, he's still, you know, pick-and-roll-wise, I think calling out coverages and being able to execute said coverage it's something he's struggling with, being able to guard two sides of the ball, you know, when people flip screens on him and stuff. And it's hard for a lot of guys to do that, but Karl is still trying to figure it out, you know, in terms of how he, you know, deals the media. I mean, he is a 10 when it comes to, like, media. He gets...
Yeah, he was... He, But have you seen those videos of him, like, interviewing, like, Kevin Durant, like 4 years ago? He was, like, a pro in the media even, like, back then. It's crazy.
He's if you meet his dad, Carl Sr., his dad is just a tremendous personality, just a great person to talk to, very engaging. We've seen Carl, you know, at a bunch of games, and we chatted him. The last time we talked to him was before the Brooklyn game here just recently when he had his whole family there and such. But you can see why Carl is the way he is when you talk to his dad, because his dad is just great. And so Carl is very respectful. He's very effervescent. He's very intelligent. He understands sound bites. He understands when you ask him a question what you're trying to get from that question. So as an interview, he's absolutely off the charts. He's charitable. He understands what it's like to give back to the community. He understands winning, what winning looks like. I think he is a winner. I just can't say enough about how he is 360 degrees when you're trying to deal with him on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, so everyone knows about his awesome strength. I mean, his shooting ability. I mean, I've seen that even the Wolves are kind of having him come off a lot of screens now as well, which you know, is something that opposing centers have no idea how to stop. But just from more of a weaknesses standpoint, I mean, is there anything, because I personally have struggled to identify one, that sort of in the long term, when you think of like what he's going to be fully formed, that, I mean, he strikes me as a guy who's not really going to have any weaknesses. Are there any that you see?
Offensively, I think that the only weakness, and really it's just about technique, really anything else, understanding the league, is that he's had a pinch and pick up silly fouls setting screens. But other than that, I mean, he's got to develop a little post game. I think that, you know, when he gets stronger and gets into his body more, I think he's going to be unstoppable. He's got really good developed post moves, right and left hand. Like you said, they'll run pin downs for him to come up from the box to the elbow, and up to even like the top of the key area where he can knock down shots. So, I mean, when you're a big and you can get a pin down for you, like, you know, they do for Tim Duncan, you've seen it, you know, for other guys too. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of skilled big guys. Anthony Davis can do it, a number of guys, but he has that. 3-point shooting, you know, Sam hasn't really given him full reign yet to spot up and be out there as a floor spacer. But I think he can do that. I think that when the system allows him to, I think he'll be very good at it. His shooting stroke is pretty good. He shoots pretty easy out there. Not Porzingis easy, but pretty easy. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's got pretty good shot technique. So,
yeah, you know, when I first kind of fell in love with him as a prospect at the 2014 Hoop Summit, and he was just, you know, in warmups, he was just draining NBA threes. And then when I saw what he was able to do defensively and passing the ball, I was like, all right, this guy's going to be the number one pick, and he could be like potentially a transformational player. About the threes, though, I think, you know, we're all in love with the idea of guys shooting threes. He has so many other skills too, as well. I mean, do you worry that, whether it's, you know, in the future or whatever, that shooting too many threes could take him out of what he could be doing inside, you know, and that's a concern at all?
Well, we kind of saw it a little bit with Kevin Love. You know, when Kevin Love got more and more comfortable shooting the 3-point shot, I mean, one of Kevin Love's best attributes was offensive rebounding. I mean, he was unstoppable, you know, thirsty offensive rebounder. And so for a team that didn't shoot the ball particularly well, to have someone like Kevin Love crashing the glass or being underneath there to put his body on somebody, because Love wasn't the kind of offensive rebounder that would swoop in from the perimeter if he was spotted up and go snap one off and you know, get a stick back. Kevin Love was the kind of offensive rebounder that had to be down there already putting his body on you. And then he would, you know, how many times you see him one arm or offensive rebound and stick it back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of offensive rebounder he was. Well, Cat does have the ability to swoop in. He has the ability to, if he's on the perimeter, to not allow himself to be boxed out and to find a lane to go rebound the basketball and go put it back in spectacular fashion. So, I mean, you know, I'm not that concerned. I mean, Cat will be that kind of guy that if he sees that a shot is going up, I think he's going to not allow himself to be boxed out and go in there and try to rebound the basketball. He's got a really good ability to keep the ball alive and back tap. I just think he has good instincts. I think that whatever he does, whatever he chooses to do and however he chooses to play is going to be successful. So, I mean, it really depends upon, you know, part of the dilemma for us is, while Gogi Jang has been great, I think that someone like, you know, Nikola Pekovic coming back into the mix and Kat playing some four, I think that Sam, you know, we don't look at when Gorgie and Kat are playing together, which one is the four and which one is the five, because they both kind of are relegated. Kat still probably guards the five, but I think Karl Anthony Towns can be whatever you want him to be. I think just like you think about Tim Duncan or Anthony Davis or any other guy that you think of as a sort of combo center power forward, I think if you put a true center next to Kat, I think it would allow him to go out there and stretch a little bit more and be more comfortable on the perimeter. So I don't see him have any offensive weaknesses right now. I just think that as this game develops, that's why I said I think that he's on track to be a Hall of Fame type player, because I think he's going to put up numbers. I think he's going to be efficient. I think he's going to shoot a high percentage, and he's going to add the 3-point shot to his game, which, you know, just from a floor spacing standpoint, that's kind of been the problem with he and Garnett together, because KG's been kind of a reluctant shooter in this offense.
Yeah.
And so when KG and Kat are in the game, a lot of times the paint is kind of plugged up. And so when Andrew Wiggins is trying to drive or Rubio's trying to come off a ball screen, there's traffic in the paint because we aren't truly spacing the floor like current NBA offenses are.
Yeah, you know, I like Towns better at the five personally, because I think that, like, having a three-point shooter at the five, like, that's what teams can't deal with these days. Like, I think they're kind of used to now, all right, you know, most fours are going to be able to shoot the threes, and then anybody who's going to be able to guard Carl out at the three-point line or in a pick and pop to the three-point line is going to have no chance against him down in the post. And so it's really, either way, he'll be able to have his way with guys. You know, if he's guarded by Brook Lopez, you know, shoot as many threes as you want. If you're guarded by, you know, a skinnier sort of like Clint Capella type or something, then you can take him down in the box. I mean, that kind of versatility offensively is what really excites me about him so much.
Well, it is probably the hardest thing to guard when you think about actions that are prevalent in the NBA. I think that rescreens and handoffs are really hard to guard, but pick and pop action when you're guarding someone like Dirk Nowitzki, I mean, you know, Dirk has proven that you've got to really change your game plan and how you guard ball screens. And the person that really benefits from that is the point guard, because the person guarding, you know, if Kat does as the five, as you say, if the guy guarding Kat is worried about Kat spacing out to 3-point range after he screens, well, that big can't maybe stay as long and maybe stop the point guard from penetrating into the paint. And then maybe you're in rotation. Then if you feel like you need to rotate to Kat, now you're in rotation, which you don't want to be in. And Kat's a great passer, so he would continue to move basketball. So you're right. I mean, you know, I mean, and the other thing too, it's just like, you know, trying to, for point guards who have the ability to post up. Well, point guards don't practice post defense very much. So if you have a point guard that can post up, I mean, they aren't used to going down there and defending a point guard that can really do work down there. And the same is true for centers going out on the perimeter guarding people who are going to shoot threes. They are not used to or comfortable with going out to close out the 3-point shooters outside the arc, you know? So, and so we've seen that even with our team. I mean, even Kat, like, sometimes will give up 3-point shots to spacers that can shoot it, because they just aren't all together and don't know really how to close out to somebody outside the arc.
Well, let's move on to Andrew Wiggins. You know, what do you think? He obviously has great athleticism. He's made some great strides with his post game. I really like what he's been able to do, you know, adding to his skill, attacking to the basket. We're seeing like a little more flashes of him in pick and roll. What do you kind of see as the most likely outcome for him as a player once he's kind of fully formed? And, you know, then what is his ceiling as a player?
That's a really great question, Nate. And I don't think I have an answer for you specifically, because a lot of it depends upon Andrew Wiggins' mindset. And what I mean by that is some of it has to deal with mentally how hard he wants to play, and if he specifically defensively will continually possession in, possession out, get into a stance and be hard to play against. because I think that, that for me, that that's a thing that, you know, his dad, I played with his dad in Houston. Mitchell Wiggins and I were teammates, you know, and Elijah wanted Sampson and we're together. And so that's what Mitchell hung his hat on, was tremendous defensive pressure. And so I just think that what makes the best defensive teams in the NBA hard to play against is that it starts with, you know, transition defense and then being hard to play against in terms of ball pressure. I mean, having active hands. I mean, when you play against the San Antonio Spurs, they're hard to play against because everybody's pressed up and they have active hands and they rotate so well and everybody's in a stance. When you see Kawhi Leonard play, whether it's in person or on TV, I mean, that dude, pulls up his shorts and he's in a stance and he's got his hands wide and he's ready to play every single tick of the clock. And so all those Spurs guys are, and all the good defensive teams do that. And so, but when you see Andrew play, one of the things that is confounding, I think, for coaches that have tried to coach him early on is that when you see Andrew on the weak side, a lot of times he's standing up and straight up and down with his hands on his hips sometimes. But when he decides to get into a stance, I mean, and play like every possession matters defensively and being a great weak side defender and a great on ball defender and having a desire to get through screens and not be screened. Cause you know, we just played San Antonio twice in the last three games. So I just watched Kawhi Leonard, you know, play up close two times and just watching him on video and watching him in person, the way that he doesn't allow himself to be screened. And then his ability to switch onto bigger guys, and if he gets rolled up, he's still a tremendous, it doesn't matter who he's playing against, how big the person is, he's a great post defender. Well, Andrew, you know, it does not get through screens well, and if he gets switched on and gets rolled up, and even in matchups, I mean, at small forward position, he gets bullied a lot down there because physically he hasn't grown into his body yet. So, you know, to me, his ceiling could be Scottie Pippen if he would – defensively take on sort of that mindset of I'm going to be impossible to play against every single possession. Because, you know, in NBA games, you know this, I mean, it comes down to four or five possession on each side of the ball. And, you know, if you're guarding Paul George and he post feeds and speed cuts, and all of a sudden you're trailing that speed cut and they're able to just give it to Paul George for a layup, which is what happened against Indiana. Or if you get screened off on a ball screen and now you try to get over the top and you don't get back in front of your player and the big that you should switch on to rolls to the hoop and you're late and that player gets a layup. I mean, that kind of stuff just can't happen. And those are the four or five possessions that kill you in a game. And so when Andrew, I just think some of it's being young. I think it's part of it is physical. Like he physically isn't strong enough yet to deal with a Carmelo Anthony or a Kawhi Leonard or when he gets switched on to a big. And then some of it's a mindset of like, you know, like I say, pulling up your shorts, you know, get into a stance and say, you're not scoring, you know, and having a, if we don't score, you don't score kind of mentality. I just don't think that young players understand that all the time.
It's interesting what you said about him not being in a stance, because one of the things that a lot of analytics guys will note about him is despite his athleticism, he doesn't really get that many rebounds or steals or blocks. And what you said about him not being in a stance all the time, especially on the weak side, makes sense. Because when you're not in a stance, if something happens that you need to react to, you can't just react. You have to first get into an athletic position, and then you have to go.
That's right.
I mean, that's what always used to kill me about Amari Stoudemire, too. Like, that's why he could never defend. He was just never in a stance. And so he has to, you know, it takes him an extra beat to kind of react. So that's an interesting explanation. But like, because that was going to be one of the questions I was going to ask you is, you know, despite his gifts, why do we not see him kind of make more of an impact in those other categories?
Well, here's an example. Okay, so if you're a weak side defender, right, and you're guarding a good player on the perimeter and he's on the weak side, if you are too far outside the lane, obviously the 2-9 rule makes you be outside the lane. But if you aren't in the stance, it's hard to be a weak side defender that needs to be. You know, we have two defensive 3-second calls against this all season long. And so I just think that our players, you look at some of the teams that have multiple defensive 3-second calls, those are teams that defensively are always like trying to stress the 2-9. And why are they doing that? Because they're always trying to cleanse and always trying to come into the paint, get their head into the hoop, then get back out again. Well, I just don't think Andrew does think about that. And so one of the things that Sam Mitchell has been trying to tell them is that if you're too far outside the paint on the weak side towards your player who's spotted up outside the arc, and you're not, you know, trying to 2-9 and trying to get your head under the hoop once in a while to be a good weak side defender, if you're starting out and now the ball swings and there's dribble penetration, you can't get there to plug, to stop, or to help in any kind of dribble penetration. And then you also can't come in and go back out and get to the shooter in time. So a lot of it depends on you starting in. You've got to be in first and then be that weak side defender. So if there's dribble penetration, you could be there as a good help defender. And then if you're in, it's a lot easier to be in to sprint out than it is to be out, come in, because you're reacting, and now to sprint back out again. Now you're doing two things versus just one. You know what I mean? So if I had video, I could show it to you better. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's just what, you know, no, instead of doing two things, he's doing two things versus just doing one thing, you know?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I kind of, you know, we've talked about Wiggins a little bit, and, you know, we've kind of been talking about his flaws. Obviously, he has a lot of gifts. I think he's made some great strides. I mean, just, you know, everyone who complained that he wasn't aggressive enough, well, he's got, I think the last time I checked, he had like a 28 usage percentage. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say that he's not aggressive enough offensively anymore. You know, and he gets to the foul line all the time too. I mean, so you've got these two guys as a foundation. Let's say we're just, you know, in a vacuum, we want to construct a team around these two guys. You know, what are you thinking of if you're the GM, that when these guys are fully formed, we need around them to have, you know, a real kind of championship level of team?
Well, you need a power forward that's going to be productive. Kevin Garnett is, you know, one of the top five greatest power forwards of all time. I mean, you can rank them however you want to rank them. Tim Duncan, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Kevin Garnett. I mean, you know, I don't know how you want to rank Garnett, but at this point, KG, you know, is playing, you know, 15 to 18 minutes a game, and he had one of his best games last ball game against San Antonio. He had 10 points and was very productive. I think he was, you know, 5 of 6 from field. And when he does that, I mean, it's like, boy, it just really, like, it's a breath of fresh air for the offense when that power forward comes in and does work like that. Gorgui Dieng comes in and plays with Cat, and it's that piece doesn't really fit that well now the floor isn't spaced at all. When Bielitsa should have been that guy and was that guy for about a 6 or 7 game stretch, where when Minnesota was beating Chicago on the road and Atlanta on the road, it was Bielitsa that was invaluable in that situation. But, you know, Bielitsa has sort of stumbled a bit, and, you know, he can't guard anybody. He's averaging 2.8 fouls per game.
What happened to him? I mean, was it just like, is he kind of like not recovered from that knee contusion that he had? Because it seemed like that was like the watershed to where he was doing real well, and now, you know, he hasn't been playing. He's kind of even been almost out of the rotation lately.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to say. I haven't really point blank asked him. He's a great kid who I think wants to do well. I think that when he was really helping Minnesota was when he was spacing the floor and he was able to knock down. He made some big, big 3-point shots. And, you know, they were calling him Mr. Professor Big Shots. That's his nickname over in Europe.
Yeah.
But, you know, he'd come in the game and he would immediately get fouls. And I'm not sure he knows how to play. I don't think he knows what to do when he comes in the game because, I mean, seemingly if you watch him, he comes in the game and he gets a foul almost immediately. And just go down the list of power forwards in the league. I mean, who can he realistically guard at this point without fouling? I mean, from Anthony, we haven't played against New Orleans yet, but you know, he would not match up well with Anthony Davis as a 4. Blake Griffin, Chris Bosh, Paul Millsap, Dirk, Derek Favors.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just go down the list. I mean, he just doesn't deal well. We just played LaMarcus Aldridge. He had to guard LaMarcus Aldridge and did an okay job, but LaMarcus is so much bigger than him. He can get bullied down there in the low post as well. So, like, a lot of times teams will just post him up and see if he fouls. So fouling has been a problem for Nemanja Bjelica. His, you know, when he's been open on the perimeter, he's been playing with a unit that doesn't really look for him that much. I think Zach, you know, when Zach's been at the one, Zach is a shoot first point guard. When Shabazz gets it, he's looking to create offense. And so when Bielitz has been out there and been open, he hasn't always been given the ball when he's been open. So, I mean, that's his one separator. You talk about pick and pop game. I mean, he was twisting teams up with, you know, setting angle screens or high ball screens and then spacing out to the slot where it forced teams into rotation or they just left him open. And he was killing teams with that. So, you know, he's got to find his niche. So when you're saying, you know, how do you build a team around Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns, you need to have a power forward that can be productive, because we got Garnett, we got Gordie Jang, we got Bielitsa. Rudej has been in there at times, and he's been good in moments, but Sam isn't willing to play him over the other three in his significant minutes. I think that being said, I mean, we can get into the whole Rubio thing too, because Rubio is a whole nother, you know, quandary, because he's, I love Ricky Rubio. He loves being in Minnesota. You know, having a point guard that can operate in pick and roll game, that can shoot the basketball from the perimeter consistently and make shots. I mean, you know, it's really difficult when you're running pick and roll game with Karl Anthony Towns, and they just go under the screen on Ricky and need him on the other side. And then, so it takes away his ability to penetrate off pick and roll. And it also takes away any ability to hit a roller, because Karl Anthony Towns' man has to react to him in pick and roll games. So Rubio is just so great. I mean, there's so many aspects of his game that you could talk about how great he is.
Yeah. Other than the shooting thing, he's a perfect fit with all the rest of the guys. Like, defensively, you know, I think he's really good. It's just, it's tough. And especially when they go under too, with some of these guys they go under on, it's still a risk, because the guy can get ahead of steam and finish at the basket, but that's something that Ricky struggles with as well.
And then he shoots 42% at the rim.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, 17 points under the league average. You know, so because the league average, you know, inside the RA is 59%. Ricky shoots 42%. So when he does get by somebody, he doesn't have the ability to elevate or to quick jump people like Tony Parker does. I mean, Tony Parker is not jet quick all the time, and he doesn't jump all that well. But Tony Parker, just because he can't shoot and you have to guard him, you have to go over the top of the screen. Now you're trailing. Now the big has to react. And he can quick shoot people. He has floater game. You know, Ricky doesn't have the floater game. And so if you can't get to the rim, you've got to be able to knock down those Tony Parker like floater shots around the rim and be accurate with it. So it's a quandary. We've got two nice pieces, and whether Wiggins is going to become a Scottie Pippen or be a Rudy Gay, you know, like in that, because, you know, you stick Wiggins on any team, he's probably going to get 16, 22 points a game. Any team.
Yeah.
You stick him on any team. But whether he becomes that elite Hall of Fame type player, like I think Karl Anthony Towns is, I just don't feel as confidently saying that about Andrew. So Andrew could be a Hall of Fame type player. I mean, he gets to be 22, 23 years of age. He figures it out, how hard he has to play every tick of the clock. You get it. Ricky Rubio, I just don't know if he can improve his shooting, and he's so great in so many ways, but is his inability to get to the rim and be able to make shots consistently off a pick and roll or being a spot up shooter, is it really going to take you to the next level? You know, that's the question. And so, I mean, it really is difficult. I think that getting more perimeter spot up shooters that can make threes, I mean, being able to, you know, get to the corners and transition and knock down, I mean, that's a killer. You know, when you just play the Spurs twice and you see how they operate and in transition and their secondary break actions, how they get their players to the corners and, you know, they break you down off the dribble, whether it's Ginobili, whether it's Patty Mills, whether it's, and they find those spot up shooters. It's just a killer out there. And so it's hard to guard. And we just don't have those kind of floor spacers who can make shots consistently.
Zach LaVine also is really intriguing to me as far as what his fit could ultimately be with the big two. You know, he's been playing some point guard. That's been a matter of some controversy in the NBA Twitter sphere that's not his best position. On the other hand, you know, it does let him handle the ball and kind of grow as a player, work on his ball handling, work on his pick and roll play. Do you think that, you know, can he be kind of a third banana in the starting lineup, reduce his usage a little bit? I think he's at 28%. Now, you know, maybe a little bit fewer contested long twos, or is it going to be where he's going to ultimately fulfill more of a Jamal Crawford bench gunner type of role with this team?
Well, the one thing, you know, I think that one of the things that people say is that Sam isn't the right coach. And so, I mean, I'm at practice and shoot arounds. I'm telling you that Sam is saying really good stuff. Like the stuff that he says and the way they're trying to coach these guys up is good stuff. And so one of the things he's trying to help them understand how to actually play the game. I mean, they play basketball, but not like his Sam says, they're not playing basketball. They're not really, you know, and so when you're playing against other teams that understand the game, like when you see the Spurs, or when you're playing against the Clippers, who have so many veteran players that understand winning and what it takes to win, you know, they're trying to get Zach to understand what a good shot is. And so when, you know, especially time and score. And so when you think about time and score, when you've had an 8-point lead, and now because of, for whatever reason, that lead is hemorrhaged, and now you're either even or down a bucket or two. Is that the time to come down and off the screen, come and jack another three? And that's the sensibility. That's where Zach has to understand how to play the game. Like, what needs to be done right now? Do I really need to take another quick shot after we've just gone on the other team's gone on an 8-0 run? And that's been sort of what Sam is trying to get through to Zach, is that to understand what a good shot is. And if you take that shot in the first or second quarter, that's fine, you know, but, you know, in the last 4 minutes of a close game, that shot is a killer, because now it ignites a break, and, you know, it kills you because you just missed a shot, and the other team comes down and maybe gets an and one. You know, I mean, that's what seemingly always happens to this young team, is that they're in all these games, and then it comes down to the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game, and like you say, Zach's usage is high, so he has the ball in his hands a lot. Because they're trying to get him to understand how to play and put him in these situations, because the only way to learn is to be in the game, not sitting on the bench. And so they're trying to get Zach to understand what a good shot is. So that's been the main thing for him, is that, is to how to be strong with the basketball when you drive, how to draw contact and get to the free throw line versus missing the layup. And now you're behind the play because we're playing 5-on-4, you know? Just things like that. So, you know, Zach may end up being that guy that you stick him in the game. If he makes shots and he's hot, like Jamal Crawford, you leave him in there. And if he's not and he's hurting you, you sit him down. But we don't have that luxury because we don't have the depth of guys that can play. I mean, Sam could play Andre Miller 15 minutes a game. And he could play, you know, other guys instead of playing Zach, but Zach has to learn. And so I'm telling Sam's doing a good job, I think, of what he's saying is good. And what they're trying to get him to do is really good. So now it's just a matter of, will that message sink in, and will they be able to make adjustments through it? And I think Zach has come a long way from where he was last year, Nate. I think he really has.
Absolutely.
So he's better. So positionally, you know, having another one, that brings us to Tyus Jones. So, you know, I think that a good situation is, if you're not going to play Andre Miller 15 minutes a game, have, you know, optimally what I'd like to do is restart the season and play Ricky Rubio 33 minutes and have Andre Miller play 15 and have play Zach off the ball. Because when Zach and Andre Miller are on the floor at the same time, they're fantastic. They've got, those two have really good chemistry together, because, you know, Andre understands, I'm going to keep the ball in this possession in my hands, or I'm going to headband it to Levine and let him do his thing on this possession. And having two pick and roll point guards on the floor at the same time is a good idea. You know, so whether it's Rubio and Levine or Andre Miller and Levine, that's fine. But with Tyus Jones now, Tyus's 6-game stint in the D League was invaluable for him. I think he got a lot of confidence from that.
He was awesome. He averaged like 24 points a game in that stint.
Yeah, he was getting 19 shots a game. He was shooting the three at 42% or 43% clip. I mean, he was dynamic. And so he got a little confidence. So I think that playing Tyus, who I think is an absolute winner, I've seen Tyus play since he's been in seventh grade. You know, my son, who's at Northwestern now, played, you know, against Tyus. With Tyus, we know the family really well. I knew his dad from way back. Tyus, I just think Tyus high school, Tyus college, Tyus in the pros, he's developing that game, but he's just a winner. Like he's one of those guys, and whatever team in a pickup game has Tyus on, it's going to win. They're going to stay on the court because he's going to do whatever it takes to win. He's a competitor. He's smart. He's great in pick and roll game. I think defensively he's got to figure it out a little bit, but I think him playing with Zach, I think if they can get that going, I think that's what you're going to see over the next 10 games, is you're going to see that dynamic off the bench, I think, get better and better, hopefully.
Yeah, they've started playing Tyus now after that D-League stint, and he did well. Does that kind of signal, and maybe I'm wrong with this, but a little bit of a shift now? You know, they were 9-9. They've been on, you know, a rough skid lately. Is that kind of signal now that this is really shifting into, again, more of a developmental season this year?
I don't know. I think that we have a roster even with the young guys. I mean, we have a middle of the road rated offense, and we've got 20-year-olds running it. We've been dropping, our defensive rating's been dropping over the past few weeks. We've played some better competition that has dropped our defensive rating lower, but we were middle of the pack offense, middle of the pack defense. And I don't know if they're just going to relinquish and say this is a development type of season yet. I just think that, you know, Kevin Martin was the logjam. Kevin Martin had been the logjam all along, because that's why Zach had to play the one, because if he ranked, came out of the floor, they tried bringing Tayshaun to the bench and start Kmart. That didn't work out very well because Kevin just went through a shooting slump and he wasn't making shots. And if he's not making shots, then his value on the floor is diminished, you know? So then they tried bringing him off the bench and playing him significant minutes. But if you do that, then where does Zach play? Because you really should play off the ball. But Kmart had been a logjam. So in order to get people where they need to be, Kmart had to stop playing, you know? And that was the reality of it, is that, but how do you keep someone as good as Kevin Martin up, you know, not playing when he's a valuable player, because he's the one guy that can get you buckets in bunches. You know, he can get you 30, even coming off the bench. I mean, this dude could shoot the three. He could play isolation basketball and get to the free throw line or get to the rim. He could make 2-point shots. I mean, he was great in transition. I mean, you know, so how do you not play Kevin Martin? But the reality is, in order to get Zach to where he needed to be, Kevin Martin had to stop playing. And then you got to get Tyus in the game. So they finally made the decision to, you know, for the betterment of the development of all of our young guys, we got to put them in the right place. And then, you know, Kmart is where he is right now. Kmart understands. They've had a meeting. Kmart is not plus. He's got DNP the past few games. So, I mean, that's the reality of it, is that in order to get Tyus on the floor and Zach to the two, Kmart had to stop playing.
Yeah. Well, that's, and it sounds like he's taken that as well as could be expected, you know, obviously for a veteran who, you know, could potentially be a free agent after this year. I know you got to go soon. I want to talk to you a little bit about some broader NBA stuff. You mentioned that you guys have played the Spurs twice in the last week or two. What are your thoughts on them? And, you know, you've also played the Warriors. What do you think of how those two teams match up?
Well, obviously I love both the teams for a lot of the same reasons, because they just play the right way. They play both sides of the ball. They shoot the ball at a high clip. Golden State shoots more threes, obviously, than San Antonio does. San Antonio doesn't take as many threes as they once did. But, you know, one of the big reasons why Golden State is good is because they can play that small lineup and switch everything. Well, you're going to be in trouble if you switch against the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, Draymond Green is tremendous, but I just don't know how it's going to work against LaMarcus Aldridge and David West. I mean, those two coming to the San Antonio Spurs just is a huge trump card, because at the end of the day, San Antonio is still going to be able to stay with you in terms of shooting percentage. They're going to be able to make threes, maybe not at the same clip, but they're going to get stops because defensively they're just so good in rotation. You know, they do things in pick and roll game. They don't switch unless they need to, but they stay matched up 5-on-5 too. So if Patty Mills were to not be able to get over the screen and whoever it is with the basketball is attacking their big, well, they can still contain. David West is a very good pick and roll big. Marcus Aldridge is too. Tim Duncan's one of the level pick and roll defenders of all time. But Patty Mills will switch onto the big and they'll either kick him out. They just rotate well. You know what I mean? Like, they, I don't want to get into the nuances of pick and roll game, but they, they stay matched up 5-on-5. They rotate so well. Kawhi Leonard is, and I had this debate too with somebody, because I was saying, I'm just looking at the small forward position. Kawhi Leonard to me is as valuable almost as LeBron James and Kevin Durant. If you put Kawhi Leonard on a different system, could Kawhi Leonard average 26, 27, 28 a game with his game right now? He's not going to in San Antonio, just like LaMarcus Aldridge isn't going to average the same numbers. But the way that Kawhi Leonard plays both sides of the ball, he's such a disruptive defender. And offensively, he's shooting at, 45, 46% from outside the arc. Tremendous.
His shot making from every area has been unbelievable. I mean, he used to just be with his floaters. Now he's hitting an above average percentage from pretty much everywhere on the floor.
And his ability to drive the basketball and get to the rim and dunk it on you. I mean, he's so good. So I mean, they're when you see San Antonio play in person, Nate, when you see how big Kawhi Leonard, Tim Duncan, and LaMarcus Aldridge are, and then you bring in David West off the bench for Boris Diaw. Boris Diaw is Draymond Green before Draymond Green was Draymond Green. I mean, he was the pocket pass decision making guy. You know, so you put Boris Diaw on a ball screen with Tony Parker, and then Parker pocket passes out of it to Boris Diaw in the middle of the floor. And now he's a decision maker, and he, you know, that's what Draymond Green does in spades, right? Like Draymond Green is so hard to guard because of that. Well, Boris Diaw has been doing that for years. And so they have one of those, you know, and Boris Diaw can completely house you in a post-up situation. I mean, we tried to guard Boris Diaw. They would isolate him in a left box post-up, and he was just killing guys down there. So
Somehow, even though he goes left shoulder every single time, like he still he still gets that, especially young dudes who like aren't used to executing like the scouting report. I'm sure I didn't see that game, but I'm sure he was just killing you as Sam Mitchell was just like pulling his hair out in frustration, probably.
Well, because you don't want to have to double team, because as soon as you double team, he's kicking it out to, you know, Patty Mills, or and that second unit for San Antonio. I mean, and, you know, and Pop just plugs in whoever that is, the du jour fifth guy at the night. It could be Bonner, could be Simmons, could be Anderson. You know, I mean, like, their second unit is a separator for me. So if you're going to try to grind San Antonio down in a seven-game series, you're not going to be able to do it because they can withstand injuries. They've got depth. Their second unit moves the ball and plays just as well as the first unit does, if not better. Ginobili, if he can stay healthy. Patty Mills is so underrated as a point guard. He's so good on both sides. He can, you know, he pressures up. He can give Tony Parker long stretches of rest on the bench because he can pressure up. He can run the offense. He's a good 3-point shooter. He's great in pick and roll game. He can defend pick and roll like a banshee. I mean, he's so good. I just think that for me, you know, seeing both teams up close, it's really close, but I think San Antonio is better because of, you know, if you're going to be Golden State and start switching all that stuff and you're going to get rolled up and you're going to be starting all of a sudden, you know, Harrison Barnes and Dallas going to get posted up by David West, what are you going to do? I mean, so I don't know. That's just kind of my assessment of those two teams. I think San Antonio is better.
Interesting. So the theory that I've had, I think that Draymond actually can guard LaMarcus. He did a pretty good job against him last year when he was in Portland, I think we just have a difference of opinion on that one. But this is my theory on why.
I think Draymond can guard LaMarcus. I'm just saying that, you know, possession. It's not always going to be Draymond who's going to get switched on as big. You know, I mean,
you're saying after a switch. I got you.
Yeah.
So this is my theory on why I think Golden State matches up a little bit better. I think number one, Tim Duncan is a great pick and roll defender, but I do think at this point at his age, him having to get out on a pick and roll with Steph Curry or having to guard him on a switch if they get caught up could be a little bit of a problem. And then I think also, where do you put Tony Parker? Because he's really declined defensively. He's putting him on Curry, I think, is probably not going to be what they want to do. So then now are you going to put him, and you can't put him on Klay Thompson either because he'll shoot right over him. So now is he going to be guarding Harrison Barnes? That's a little bit of an issue as well. And even like rookie Harrison Barnes was able to light him up in that series like 3 years ago when they had that same kind of strategic quandary. So I think that while San Antonio is one of the, you know, statistically is one of the best defenses we've seen, I do think that there are ways for Golden State to attack them offensively.
Well, and that, like I say, maybe for any single game, but a seven-game series, I mean, you could theoretically play Kawhi Leonard at the four, which they've done. They play small two.
That would be really interesting. Yeah.
I mean, so you put Kawhi Leonard at the four, and you've got Ginobili on the floor with, you know, if Tony Parker's not doing it, Patty Mills can get up and pressure up. Patty Mills can guard a lot of guys. So, I mean, ultimately, you're going to have to guard Golden State in a team concept. I mean, in isolation basketball, one-on-one, or trying to play two-man game in pick-and-roll game, whether it's up high or on the wing or in step-ups, I mean, you're going to have to try to contain. Nobody can guard Steph Curry. So Steph Curry is unguardable. So let's just give that. I mean, like, you know, he is an unreal, surrealistic player that is transcendent. So, but any kind of scheme that I'm just going to put my money on Greg Popovich scheming and doing things to be able to get an advantage. So, we're talking in hypotheticals, and when they start playing each other, we'll see better. But I just think in a seven-game series, Pop's going to figure out a way how to scheme it, and his players are pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, these are both, you know, I think both have net ratings over 13. I mean, that's when I looked at it a week ago, they had basically if they finished the season at this level, which they probably won't, but they would be the two best point differentials of all time right now where those teams are at, which is crazy. All right, I know you got to go. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. Where can we follow you on Twitter?
Jim Pete Hoops. Yep.
All right.
I just reached my 10,000th follower, Nate, so I'm pretty pumped about that. So
I just saw that, and it was Kara Lawson was actually who ended up being my girl,
Kara Lawson. She's a great player in the WNBA. You know, I've gotten to know her through my coaching stint with the Lynx, and I thought she did a great job on Christmas Day. I'm so proud of her because she's gotten a lot of reps and doing some ESPN analyst work, and I just was really proud of her because I thought she represented herself very well on Christmas Day down in Miami.
Yeah, she was good in that Miami-New Orleans game. I actually tweeted as much as well. Well, all right, we'll have to have you back on again at some point because there are a million other things I wanted to ask you about when we have more time. But thanks so much for coming on. Remember, when you're clicking League Pass to watch a Timberwolves game, make sure you click on the Timberwolves broadcast because Jim does an awesome job. You're going to want to hear him probably the most analytically focused, as you heard his analysis today. Of the color guys on the local league pass. So thanks so much for coming on, Jim, and we will talk to y'all next time on the Dunked On Basketball podcast.
Thanks a lot, Nate. Thanks for having me on.